Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we come to the apex of the week. That's what we call it when we get to the last hour of the work week. The apex of the week. We call it that especially when Trent is here. Trent Horn is our guest. Trent is apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of many, many things, including Why We're Catholic, his most popular book, and Answering Atheism, the book most likely to be invoked today because we are talking with atheists. If you're an atheist, we welcome your call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. You don't get tired, do you, Trent? You're just ready to go. You're fired up. More talk with more atheist people.
I'm only tired on the inside, Cy.
Are you really? Babies will do that, do you?
Young children, they have their needs, but that's important to them. What's funny, and this is something I think every parent relates to, is that how you engage with your children, especially under the age of five, they won't remember it, but you will, and yet their whole life will be shaped by it. It's just a very interesting thing to think about.
I think about that all the time, especially because sometimes I will say stuff. You don't remember when, like, 'cause my kids are old now, and they have no memory. I mean, it was so important to me. I feel like that kind of hurts that you don't remember that. You were four.
But then it comes full circle because they're going to say, Dad, you don't remember when we did this? You're like, wait, what did we do?
Yeah.
So then
like,
it comes
that already
kind of
happens. Right. There's a lot of that going on. Yeah. But it's true. The stuff that they won't remember is probably the most important stuff you'll ever give them because it's the foundation of their lives.
That's right.
And I'm glad to hear your son orders you around, though. I think that's very cool because I know that 3-year-old.
In the last hour, we were talking about the morality of commands.
Yeah.
And so if moral facts, as I call them, are commands that we ought to behave a certain way, a command is only valid based on the authority of the person who issues the command. So if I spill alphabet soup and it says, go home, I'm not going anywhere. If my children scream in the car, go home, well, I'll take that into advisement, but probably not. But then if my wife sends me a text, go home, oh, wow, that might be something really serious. I should probably go. If the President of the United States, go home,
something
Trent,
serious.
Something huge there for you. I need you
huge.
To handle. Huge. So if there is a command we say is just like, you got to obey this all the time, it's got to have a really, really high authority backing it.
And a wife is a very high authority.
Yes, right there under God, and that which you should obey, love, cherish, and inspires fear every now and then.
A healthy fear, one hopes. What is there's what Tim was telling us the other day? Servile fear, and then there's another kind of fear. I can't remember, but it's not good to have servile fear of your spouse. It's okay to have filial fear. Is the other one you fear something because it's awesome,
like fear, like that. The Proverbs say, "Psalm says, fear the Lord is the beginning of wisdom."
Right. Yeah, and fear of the wife is beginning of. Good marriage.
Right.
We're talking with atheists today. Trent Horn is our guest. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. 888-318-7884. Kevin in Washington listening on 100.7 FM is up next. Kevin, why are you an atheist?
Kevin? Hello. I would say the main reason. Can you guys hear me?
We can. Yes, Kevin. Sure.
Yes.
Hello?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. I would say the main reason that I am an atheist is I think as soon as you start to make these philosophical arguments, you almost lost the debate because I think if a God were real, like we just all know, like God would be there, like telling us, like everyone. Yeah, I just can't see a reason. Like we don't have to make a philosophical argument for anything else that exists. Like we don't make a philosophical argument for why a giraffe exists. We just go, we see the giraffe, you know, we know it's there. So I most of the explanations that I've heard are very satisfactory to me. You know, it involves like, what's the point of faith then? Or, you know, so something to do with free will. Of course, if everybody just knew God existed, we'd still have free will whether or not to worship. So
right.
I find those arguments pretty unconvincing, and that's like the main one of many reasons.
Kevin, let's rewind a little bit. You covered a lot of ground here. Number one, I agree with you that to demonstrate that an object in the universe exists, we usually don't use philosophical arguments. We just maybe use visual, photographic, or eyewitness testimony like, hey, here is this object in the space-time universe. But could there be things that exist that we can't see?
Well, I don't think there could be things that exist that we can't measure. No.
Well, I don't. Let me try this. Do you think human beings have free will?
Measure? No, I don't think. I don't think something can exist that we can't measure in some form. And certainly God, which is all powerful and this, you know, supposedly amazing being. I mean, that would be the easiest thing.
Well, Kevin, I don't understand this jump either. Just because you can't measure something, how does it show that thing does not exist? All that would show is that you just can't measure it.
Well, I mean, I think that's like the very definition.
Let me ask you a question. How long is my thought that the grass is green?
Sorry, can you repeat that one more time?
How long is my thought that the grass is... Can you hear me? Hello? Kevin?
Yeah.
I'll repeat it. How long
is your thought
that the grass is green, and how much does my thought that the water is wet weigh?
Well, you certainly could measure something like that with precise enough brain instruments.
Really?
You know?
Wait a minute.
I mean, that's a fully measurable thing.
You could say that the thought itself weighs something? That my thought...
Not that it weighs something, but weight is not your only measurement. You know, you could say, yeah, you definitely can measure thoughts. I mean, that's what, like, a brain scan is. It's not a weight measurement.
Well,
you know, I'm not particularly familiar with how brain science works, but... You definitely can measure thoughts. You know, thoughts appear in different parts of the brain when you measure them. So,
Right, but what you see in the brain are electrical signals. You can't actually see the thought itself, right? Because what I'm seeing right here is I see the wavy green grass. I'm seeing it right now in my mind. Yet if you cut open my head and you look in there, you can't see the grass.
Okay.
So what I'm saying, I'm just simply saying that things can exist that we don't see. I just don't see how it follows that there aren't things that are beyond what we can see, touch, taste, hear, or feel. There's lots of other things I could put in there. For example, time. You can't see, touch, taste, hear, or feel time, but time is real, right?
You can measure time. I mean, you're talking about everything that's physically perceptive, but that's not what I said. I said measure. You can measure it all. But I think that's kind of
Let's just go back, because what I'm trying to do is, if you define things in a certain way so that God is not even possible, then we can't even get the discussion started. I mean, I'll just try another one. This should be easy. Is it possible that there are other universes that are causally disconnected from our universe?
Can I just cover that real quick? Because I think before I lose my thought,
sure,
I'm not as good at being a train of thought as you maybe, but like before I lose my thought on that, of course God is possible. I don't know how saying that you would need to be able to measure God makes God impossible. God could simply appear to everyone, announce his existence to everyone, right? God could do that.
Well,
right?
Kevin, what would that look like? Let me put it this way. How could God do that in a way...
It would be easy.
...that makes it different than what advanced aliens could do?
that makes it different than what an advanced alien could do?
Right, because if just a big man in the sky came down.
Well, I really need, personally. Right, well, okay, yeah, I understand the what you're saying.
There's one other point I'd like to bring up, too. Would you agree that, because you're saying, well, God is hidden from everybody, or in the sense that not everyone believes God exists, and you were making the assumption that if God existed, he ought to make it the case that everyone believes in him. So this is often called the problem of divine hiddenness. But one point I would raise is that it seems that for the vast majority of human beings, God is not hidden. Would you agree with that factual part of the argument?
Sorry, I missed it. For the vast majority of human beings,
God is not hidden.
Kevin, are you still there?
Did we lose him?
Yeah, we were having trouble that whole conversation, so I think we lost him.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Maybe he'll come back a little later.
I'm going to leave it on hold, and either that line will straighten out. Can you check that line every now and then for me, Thomas? And we'll come back to him.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get Kevin back in a later call.
Yeah, because we don't want to just let him go like that.
Yeah.
While he's gone, while we're waiting, you have a podcast.
Yes, I do.
Council of Trent. I'm always curious about how it's going over there at Council of Trent. What's new?
Yeah, so you can learn more about it at trenthornpodcast.com, and it's my podcast where I do, you know, 1 to 2 episodes a week on how to explain our faith, how to defend it, and we dive deep into different topics. So we have done topics last week. I broke down the LGBT acronym and all the letters that come after it to understand these different issues and how to talk about them more. I've done episodes on how to explain purgatory, how to answer certain moral issues and moral objections. Next week is going to be an interesting one. So I've asked people to submit anonymously questions about Catholic sexuality, in particular, what's okay for married couples and what's not okay.
Oh.
And I think a podcast is a good venue to discuss this because we can, unlike live radio, we can kind of be more frank about it and just get right into the heart of the matter. And these are questions many people have.
Right.
That I
right.
want to present people with a way of navigating through them. Lots of you have questions about these, about what is morally appropriate for married couples and what isn't, and what should we do when we struggle with different kind of issues in this area. And that'll be released. That'll be next week's podcast. But if you'd like to learn more about the Council of Trent, you can go to, iTunes or Google Play. Just get Council of Trent, C-O-U-N-S-E-L. Or you can learn about the podcast and support it to get access to premium content like episodes only for subscribers, articles only for subscribers, the ability to submit questions for me to answer, live video chats. Yeah. And that is all at trenthornpodcast.com.
I'm really glad you're doing that married couples one, because I've heard you talk about that before. I think it's extremely helpful. I don't know if that there's enough frank talk about that. A quick one. Acceptable or not in marriage? Red wine with fish.
Well, I'm partial to red wine, so I probably wouldn't argue with you on that, but I think we could leave it up to the prudential judgment of the couple involved.
Oh,
though
okay.
I think red wine is usually more for like a heavier meat.
Yeah.
But I'm not a big white person either, except when we went on the Catholic Answers cruise to Europe, the white wine of Austria.
It's really good.
Wunderbar.
Wunderbar.
Very
glad
good.
To hear it. TrentHornPodcast.com is where you go to join up or to listen to what Trent's up to. TrentHornPodcast.com. Let's take a quick break. Be right back with more Why Are You an Atheist with Trent Horn right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live. It's the start of a new day for Morning Catholic Radio.
Isn't it the case that when you're stirring food in a pot, it burns less, like, because it's not just sitting there?
What about your forearms? You get some nice buff forearms when you're doing that stirring.
But let me say, I can totally get this for you, Gloria. You don't need any help stirring the pot.
You know, you all make it so easy for me.
Morning Glory, Catholic from the start. Weekday mornings, 7 Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest this hour, and we're talking with atheists. If you are an atheist, we'd love to chat with you. 888-31-TRUTH is the number, 888-318-7884. We go now to Steve in Cincinnati, listening on 740 a.m. there in Cincinnati. Steve, thanks so much for calling. Why are you an atheist?
I'm an atheist for reasons such as arguments that I get from Christians, as far as, and I think you brought it up earlier in the show, that there must be a God because the chance that life happened is so rare and the probability is so small that there must be. When my question to you is, isn't it possible that it just did happen by chance because the length of the universe is so old and it's been around for so long that it is possible that life just happened to be, just happened to form and then start?
Mm-hmm. Steve, that's a great question. And I think it reflects a common misunderstanding some people have about the particular argument that I gave. You're correct that some people do make the argument that the odds of human life appearing within our universe are so low that their God must have intervened somewhere in the evolutionary process or the formation of our planet and our solar system for life to exist. Whereas if the universe has been around for 13.7 billion years, it could just be the case that because the universe is large and been around for a long time, that this is the reason that, you know, we exist because we're the lucky ones that made it. A minor point on this, and something you may find interesting, scientists have long wondered whether our universe was teeming with life. You know, that if our universe is so big and so old, this is called the Fermi paradox. It's named after physicist Enrico Fermi. And he wondered, where are they? Where are all these other life forms in the universe? And a recent paper actually published by Sandberg, Drexler, and Ord out of Oxford called Dissolving the Fermi Paradox says there's a between a 40 to 80% chance that actually we are alone in the universe. So just kind of an aside there. But the particular argument I gave was not of that kind. Rather, my argument was that our universe as a whole could have been different. The laws of nature, in particular, the constants and initial conditions of the beginning of the universe could have been different. And statistically speaking, they should have been life prohibiting. We should have lived in a universe that was either, not that we should have lived there, we wouldn't be there. The universe, statistically speaking, should either be the size of an atom or be large but only contain hydrogen atoms. It's quite improbable and amazing we have a life-permitting universe, given what the laws of nature could be. And there's really only three ways to explain why the universe's laws of physics, the laws of nature, are life-permitting. They are either necessary, they are the product of chance, or they are the product of design. And as I argue in my book, Answering Atheism, and others have argued, necessity and chance don't work for various reasons. There's no reason to think the laws of physics are necessary. We can't discover them by mathematics, for example. Different models of physics, string theory and things like that, are based on the idea they could be different. And chance is something we rule out because we rule out chance in other extremely improbable scenarios that yield a valuable end. The common example I give is getting a royal flush in 10 games of poker in a row. So the idea here is not that it's that life in the universe is improbable and how it evolved and formed, though it may very well be. It's that the universe itself, the odds of it are so low. An example I gave in the previous hour is that you would be more likely to find a randomly marked atom somewhere in the known universe. I just mark one, I say, go fetch, and you found it at Alpha Centauri. You'd be more likely to do that than you would having a universe by chance alone be life-permitting. And so I think that incredibly improbable scenario cries out for some kind of an explanation. So that's essentially that particular argument from design called the fine-tuning argument that I was making.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying, Steve?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Thanks very much. 888-318-7884 is our number. 888-31-TRUTH. Trent Horn is our guest. I'm going to confess something to you, Trent. I am one of those people who thinks we're alone in the universe as far as like other creatures, you know, intelligent.
Intelligent life.
Yeah, intelligent life.
Well, I think that's...
I mean, we're marginally intelligent. Just, I mean,
right.
Now that you could call this intelligent.
Now, life. There are different... solutions to the Fermi paradox as to why we haven't observed aliens and what the reasons might be for that.
Yeah.
Are there other intelligent civilizations? One argument is that the hurdles for other life to reach the intelligent level are too high, and so they never evolve at all. Another solution is that other intelligent civilizations end up destroying themselves before they develop interstellar travel, which is why they haven't arrived here. And the final one, another one, which I find to be very humorous and interesting, is called the zoo hypothesis.
Oh,
and that's the
like
idea that.
That
we're such a backwards, strange planet. We are the victims of the Prime Directive. And so aliens know about us. They know we're here. But they keep us in a kind of galactic
zoo,
force field, so that we aren't aware of them and other people can't come and borrow us, because it would be a shame for these advanced civilizations to mess with such primitive beings like us.
Yeah. There's also the we're first theory. Have you ever heard that? There's plenty of intelligent life in the universe. It just hasn't happened yet. We're first. Like, that's an actual theory.
Like, they haven't evolved yet?
No, like, somebody's got to be the first, and we're first. That's why we haven't met anybody else yet.
We're the first to become intelligent?
Yes.
Okay, but others might be on their way.
Right, exactly.
It's possible.
I don't buy any of it, though. I actually am one of those... I think I'm in the minority maybe now. I don't know. I don't think there's any alien civilizations. I don't think there's any intelligent life out there.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I lack a belief... in intelligent beings, yeah. But I am open to evidence proving their existence.
I think there might actually be a preponderance of evidence or a tilt in the direction of the evidence suggesting we're it.
It's straight 50-50 for me. Maybe
really?
Maybe 55-45.
I wish I knew what Carlo Broussard thought about this. I wish I knew whether he believed
you'll have
in
to
aliens.
Ask him next time he's on the show. But this is interesting to bring up alien side, because we had another caller in the previous hour talk about this, and I want to get another caller in before we go to a break. A lot of times people will talk about God as if, well, you don't – when one caller the other hour said, you don't believe in Santa Claus. I don't believe in Santa Claus. You don't believe in God. Well, when you talk about God like he's Santa Claus or Harry Potter, that prejudices the discussion, because we know Santa doesn't exist because we have positive evidence he does not. We have been to the North Pole. We can track him by radar. We buy presents on Christmas. They don't show up magically. If they showed up magically, I'd believe. I buy them. That shows Santa – he ain't coming to my house, that's for sure. So, now.
So my kids aren't listening.
I mean, maybe he's out there, children. Don't listen to Uncle Trent.
Don't listen to Uncle Trent. That's going to be our theme when Trent is on. Okay, so
but
your point.
But the point being that maybe I should just use fairies from now on so I'm not,
so I don't get
death threats with the holiday spirit. The point being is that when we compare God, like, well, where's the evidence, yes or no? And someone says, I don't believe in God, just like I don't believe in the tooth fairy.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Someone's still going to give me hate mail over that. I'd say, well, why can't you just say you don't believe in God like you don't believe in extraterrestrials? It's not a silly idea. It's not a childish idea. It's just that, yeah, they could be out there. Let's wait for the evidence.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what's strange to me. It's like, why are you moving your prejudices into the discussion? That's going to hamper your ability to assess the evidence.
Right.
Because I'm sorry, we're not Spock. We're not rational computers. That people say, well, I've looked at these arguments for the existence of God. They don't convince me. Well, yeah, if you start with them thinking their arguments for someone who's like Santa Claus, a philosophical argument for Santa Claus or tooth fairies, I'm going to approach that. I'm going to have a kind of an attitude grading against it. But if it's a philosophical argument for something that might exist, like not even a philosophical argument, that's an empirical argument for aliens, philosophical argument for free will, moral facts, objective aesthetic value, possible worlds. God is like these philosophical concepts. He's not some empirical thing in the universe. That's like the number one thing I want to make a bumper sticker and send to my atheist friends. It's a philosophical question.
Yeah.
So we got to do philosophy here. And that's okay.
Yeah, it is. Right. But it's very hard. Like,
science informs the arguments.
Sure.
But you got to do the philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah. I still don't believe in aliens. I don't know if you were trying to convince me of that.
No, that'd be an empirical argument.
888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking with atheists about why you are atheists. We have very little time before the break, but Sam in Coney, New York, maybe you can give us your question and we'll. Can you hold on through the break if we're not able to get a full answer in?
I would like to give you a compliment. You have a very civilized and spiritual show.
Oh, thank you. Thank
you. These days, you're a rare commodity in the airways. That's what I want to give you a compliment first.
Thank you.
My call is going to take only 2 or 3 minutes, and I will summarize it.
Okay. You know what? 2 or 3 minutes. Sam, you got to hold on through the break. Can you do that?
Yes, I would be glad to do that for you.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much, Sam. I'm sorry to do that to you. We'll take a quick break. And we'll be back with Sam's comments about God and a few more folks, too. We hope we'll get into in the top of the hour. We're talking with atheists today about why are you an atheist? Our guest is Trent Horn, and we'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live. With the 50th anniversary of the release of Humanae Vitae approaching, you can expect fresh attacks on Catholic teaching from outside and, unfortunately, inside the Church. That's why Catholic Answers thought it critical to provide a vigorous affirmation of Paul VI's prophetic wisdom with our newest book, Inseparable, 5 Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humanae Vitae. We asked 5 distinguished contributors to reflect on and defend Humanae Vitae from 5 perspectives, each of them compelling, together forming a mosaic of truth. Don't be caught uninformed when the topic comes up among friends, family, and coworkers. Order your copy of Inseparable today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or visiting the shop at catholic.com.
Are faith and science compatible? Are they friends or foes? Catholic Answers Magazine is tackling that question and others with our very special Faith and Science issue, delving deep into what is arguably one of the most debated topics of our day. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 818-487-2011 or going to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. We'll take an in-depth look at the Catholic view of evolution with Dr. Stacy Trisenkos. We'll review the most common misconceptions about how faith and science stand in opposition with Dr. Chris Kazor. And apologist Trent Horn will refute the skeptic's claim that something can come from nothing, plus so much more. Don't miss out on what will be a virtual handbook on one of the most important issues of our day. Call 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine. From Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
I'm Tom Price.
And I'm Gloria Purvis. Tomorrow, a special 4th of July show featuring Monsignor Pope.
Please join us. It's Morning Glory, 7 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett. Your host, Trent Horn, is our guest. This hour, we're talking with atheists about why are you an atheist? We're also talking with the very polite and friendly Sam in Coney, New York. Sam, sorry we made you wait. What was it you wanted to say?
Thank you. Thank you for taking my phone call again. I appreciate it.
Go right ahead.
Sam?
My comment is from both sides. My comments are from both sides point of view. From organized religious point of view, they keep using this word, God, 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 create everything. Obviously, there is a creation. Nothing has happened without any force behind it. The biggest example I use with my atheist friend, then they argue about the organized religious, and I'm talking about Bibles, Torah, and Quran, is these days we can take a piece of DNA from someone's human being body. Biggest example is the stem cells, as an example.
Okay.
And take it to someone else and culture it. That stem cell knows about the existence of Sam or Trent. I don't think so. So our relationship to our creator is that cell.
Okay.
We can argue with that point. We can go scientifically, but at the end of the day, when we do the culture, the cell doesn't know about existence of the place that the source came from. So there is a creation.
Okay.
From the organized religious point of view, I have a lot of issues. The stories are not making any sense. If you read all the three books, they talk about creation the same way. Well, God created the world in 7 days. Well, I doubt it. It took 7 days to create this world.
Right.
Okay, because we live in a complex world.
Right.
We have universe that we cannot describe.
Okay.
We will find fossils that we do not know the age of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I want to say.
Sure.
I'm not saying that you both sides are wrong.
Sure.
But I have come
Sam?
To this conclusion that...
Let me jump. Yeah. Let me jump in here, Sam, because that's something I've heard a lot from people. So I believe in God, but I've got a lot of trouble with your religion because, you know, you say, I believe in the Bible. Bible says the world was made in 7 days, but look how complex it is. Things have been evolving for billions of years. How can that be the case? And I think what I would say here is that, at least in the Catholic Church, people are free to interpret Genesis. You could believe the earth is young and it was made in 7 days, but the text does not require that you believe that. We have to ask, what's the genre of the text? Like, what is its literary genre? What kind of text is it? I would say that it's not a newspaper account. It's not what you would see from a videotape of the event. That Genesis, most scholars would say it's in the genre of epic poetry. So that means you can use poetry to tell truths in a non-literal way. And I think it would make sense for God that if Genesis was written, 3,000 years ago, it was, pick a time approximate, 3,000 years ago, people 3,000 years ago knew way less than we did about the world. They didn't know about evolution, didn't know about all these things. And so if God's going to reveal to him that he made the world, he can't just tell them quantum physics. So it makes sense that he might talk to them and reveal that he's the creator in a non-literal way. It's like if a child asks me, where do babies come from? Let's say like a 6 or 7 year old, and I don't want to scandalize them. I might say, well, mommies and daddies who are married and love each other, they express their love for one another in a very special way. And the daddy gives the mommy a seed, and the seed grows in the mommy's tummy, and it becomes a baby, and then the baby comes out of mommy. Now, that's true, but if I put that down in a biology exam, I'd probably flunk. But it's true enough to make my point to this child who's still trying to grasp and understand these things. And in fact, Sam, I'll give you a clue in the text that I think points towards that Genesis and the talk about the 7 days. It's poetic and non-literal, that it's not chronological. I don't know how much of it you've read, but what does God make on the first day? Do you remember?
I read all the three books.
Sure.
Let's not to stick on the Genesis. Torah has the same story. Quran has the same story.
Right. Well, Genesis.
Let me just say something. When you come to the organized religious, you can corrupt it the way you describe it. It's poetry. It's not poetry.
Yeah.
People taking the literary, the word of the books, and enforce the things. Look at the word that we read right now.
Uh-huh.
The organized religious corrupted in every direction. Every direction. When I ask a Catholic to convert to become a reborn Christian, I say, how did you become reborn Christians?
Uh-huh.
Can you describe that to me? They can. So if you're stating that organized religious is poetry, I agree with you.
Wait.
But that's not the case anymore.
Wait, Sam, I don't understand your concern here. What I'm saying is the Bible has different genres in it. Some of it is poetic. Some of it's historical. Some of it's a list of tribes. It's a census. There's different genres. We have to see what truth is God communicating through these genres. My point about Genesis was that in the first day, God makes the light. The fourth day, he makes the sun. But even ancient people knew the sun makes the light. So that's a clue that the writer, that Genesis chapter 1, is describing creation in a poetic way that's not meant to be taken literally, but it's just saying God made the world. And he made human beings in his image. Now, the second point you raised was that, well, organized religion, human beings corrupt things, and some of us aren't capable of explaining why we believe what we do. I don't see how does that show an organized religion, a religion, is false just because there's some people who can't explain it. There's people who can't explain atheism very well or other religions. Just because there's people that can't explain it doesn't mean it's not true, right?
I think you misunderstood me about the corrupt religious.
What did you mean?
Yeah. If you're saying that, well, exactly. What you're saying, and I'm going to use your own words, you're saying that, well, it's poetry. You should have your own interpretation. Or at that time, nobody knew how to talk to the people. I think that's a little bit disregard to the people at that time. Believe it or not, the society in 2,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago, and we have examples of that in old Egyptian society, they knew how to calculate the math better than us without computer. And how do we know we didn't have any computer and the computers were collapsed?
But Sam, how would, for example, ancient Mesopotamian people that God speaks to, how would he tell them the universe is 13 billion years old when they don't even have the concept of a billion?
Well, if you're going to go through that discussion, then you're on the other side, not on the side that there was a creator for everything. Because let me just say something to you. If you look at the ancient civilization,
okay. They
were very advanced. They were very, very advanced. What happened to them, we don't know. We have no idea what happened. Because history has proven we as humans, we destroyed the past. How we destroy it, that's up to us. Look at what is going on today and how we're destroying the past 100 and 120 years histories.
Sure.
We try to reinvent it. So no one is there that tell me that organized religious was not corrupt. Nobody can tell me that because it's corrupt.
I think I would disagree with you on that point, that we have good evidence, textual reliability in history from the Bible, both the Old Testament and the New. And for me, that makes me believe in one particular holy book. I believe in the Bible because I believe in Jesus. I think the Bible reveals, taken as a human document, Jesus lived, said he was God, taught, was crucified, and rose from the dead, vindicating his claims to divinity. And Jesus quoted from Genesis. He quoted from the Old Testament. And so if he can have confidence in it, then so can I, and I can have confidence in the church he founded. So that might be how I would approach your question you were raising, and definitely call back again if you'd like to go more in depth on that.
Sam, thank you very, very much. We have time. We have time. Let's go to David in Manchester, New Hampshire, watching on YouTube. Thanks for watching on YouTube. David, why are you an atheist?
Hi. Well, you know, I would say that the primary reason is that I've really tried and I haven't really there's kind of a lack of experience of a God in my life. I would, just to give you a little background information, I would say that, you know, going back to my early childhood, I've had some very hard times in my life, and I really did kind of try. I prayed and I tried to develop a spiritual life and a relationship with God. And, you know, in all fairness, I should say that there were times early on when I kind of thought I was starting to, but it never really amounted to anything. And I've kind of tried to recapture that, but I haven't. And today it really just seems to me that that there is nothing there, that there's no God there. I just wonder what your thoughts on that were.
Well, David, you said your spiritual life did not amount to anything. What did you want it to be that it wasn't?
Well, I guess I would say that I kind of wanted it to be something where I would really kind of feel God's presence, that it would be like he was really, it would be like he was there. It would be, I could kind of, I could sense him, I guess I would say. I mean, I know I didn't expect that, you know,
a burning bush,
like physically.
Like no burning bush or anything like that, but just sense that he's there. What did you do to try to cultivate that feeling of the presence of God?
Yeah, I think that sums it up well. And I mean, I would say I didn't necessarily expect that there would be like a literal physical sign that I would see, but I was kind of, I was looking for would be to kind of know in my heart and to kind of sense that he was there.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I understand this, David. I think that this is something many people experience, and they call it spiritual dryness. And this is something I've written about in my book, Answering Atheism, and I've told others. I think that God blesses some people with like an overwhelming emotional sense that he's there. And other people, he hasn't blessed them with that or really very much at all. And I am one of those people that has not really been blessed with this deep feeling of the presence of God. It's something I always try to cultivate in prayer and receiving the sacraments. And I always feel like down about, I've felt down about that sometimes. Well, why don't I feel it more? And the only time I really super strong felt it was I was in Jerusalem at Calvary itself on a pilgrimage. And I just felt God speaking to me saying, you're not able to feel me, so you can help other people come to know me. And that I really felt compelled there, the idea that we can know God exists, we can know that Jesus is his son, that he established a church. And what we need to look at is, well, is there good reasons for this? And maybe we can, develop a sense of God in our own lives. And sometimes it takes time to do that. It takes a lot of time in prayer, in meditation, in spiritual direction. I might recommend, David, that if you want to develop a close, say, oh, I really want to feel the presence of God more, talking to someone like even, I don't know what your religious background is, but finding like a Catholic priest or someone who is a religious person to help you through that. Because it sounds like you would like God to be there. You're just wondering, like, why can't you feel it? Is that kind of where you're at?
I would say very often, yes.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'd also put it to you this way. Why not just live as if God is there, and whether you feel it or not, give that time, but what harm would there be in just living in that, well, there's good reasons to see God exists, I want God to exist, it's not a crazy idea, and I think if you, the more that you live with the idea that God is there, that I think maybe if you just start with, I'm going to say, start here in the head, like, yeah, it makes sense, God makes sense, and even if I can't feel it, when it starts more in the head and you live that way continuously, then I think it's more likely to migrate down to the heart. So maybe living that way, at least mentally, intellectually, and then praying, saying, God, it would be helpful. I would really like to be able to feel your presence, but I will trust you. I will trust you with whatever gift of your presence you choose to give me, because we're not owed anything from God. I mean, he died for our sins. We weren't owed any of that. I'm just grateful that he saved me from an eternity apart from him. Everything after that is gravy, kind of, for me, is how I feel. So what do you think about that? Starting with living it mentally, thanking God, saying, God, you are good, and I want to be free from sin, be close to you, acknowledging him head continuously, and let it slowly migrate to heart. What do you think that might be a helpful path forward?
I think it might, yeah.
Okay, why don't you do that, and then if you ever need any other advice or help with that, feel free to call back. You can look at our Catholic Answers radio calendar at Catholic Answers Live at Catholic.com, and you might enjoy talking to our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, because this definitely might be something that falls under his purview, and you could get a little advice from our chaplain. I see him for spiritual direction, actually, and it's a wonderful experience, and so having someone mature and grounded in the faith to help you through spiritual formation, I think, be helpful. So look on our calendar for the chaplain is in with Father Hugh. Try that head to heart, then call back, and I'll pray for our listener. Or sorry, I'll ask our listeners to pray for you as you continue this journey so that you can grow closer to God.
Okay, David?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. God bless you, brother. You know, I do spiritual direction with Father Hugh, too, and he said I'm farther along than you. We were just discussing that.
Well, I think that the point he was telling you that size, he wanted you to have an opportunity to overcome pride. It was a test to grow in that area.
No, he just straight out said, wow, you're way farther along than Trent Horn.
Dang it, I forgot. The personally, seal of confession only applies in confession, I guess.
It wasn't confession. I don't want you to think about that. Okay, I'm just kidding, Trent. That didn't really happen. I just want to say that in case someone's like, that is shocking that Sai would say that.
But here's the problem. Sai, I need a lot of help in the spiritual life. So if you're further along than me, that's like the guy who came in after the guy who was last in the marathon. It's not a lot of bragging rights.
No, it's like the guy who they carried in a stretcher over the end of the marathon. Hey, what's this thing that I've been told that you have the case against contraception.
Oh, yes. So in a week, we will be commemorating the 50th anniversary of Humana Vitae.
Yeah.
Pope Paul VI's encyclical reaffirming the church's teaching on contraception. You bet everybody's going to be talking about that and how they disagree with the church on contraception. So I created a DVD I think is very helpful to explore that issue. It talks about the philosophical, the logical, theological, and social medical reasons to be against contraception. So I go through all of that, through the encyclical. You talk about the commission that formed before Humana Vitae and the encyclical itself, arguments against contraception, and why natural family planning is better, holier, and healthier for people than the use of contraceptives. And that's in my new DVD, The Case Against Contraception.
And it's on sale.
That's right.
It's coming out on sale because almost everything we've got, books, audios, CDs, DVDs, tracks, digital products, it's all 10 to 20% off or more at shop.catholic.com, including The Case Against Contraception, due early next week. Perfect timing for the 50th anniversary of Humana Vitae. Go to shop.catholic.com today and begin saving.
Got questions? Visit us today at catholic.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The devil will always do his best to tempt you into sin until you get to that place where you love sin. That's what he wants. He wants you down there with him. And not because he loves you, he hates you. When you do what the enemy tempts you to do, he does it out of pure hatred.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being with us. We're discussing why are you an atheist with atheists. If you're an atheist and you'd like to share with us why, we just love that. We really appreciate it. Trent Horn is our guest. Answering Atheism is among his many books. Why We're Catholic is also another of his books. And you deal with some of this in Why We're Catholic, about why we believe in God, for example.
That's right.
Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love is the name of the book. And I was able to inform Trent of this. He did not know this fact. These are his two best-selling books of his many books.
I was aware that Why We're Catholic had done fairly well. A lot of people have really enjoyed that book, and I'm very happy to hear that. But I did not know Answering Atheism was number two. I think it's a big subject out there, and it's important for us to reach out to people. I think what also was helpful was when I wrote that book, and that was about 6 years ago, actually, really I tried to strike a balance in having something that was comprehensive yet accessible on that subject from a Catholic viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of different books on atheism, but some were higher level or they were kind of shorter. Mm-hmm. I wanted to try to walk both of those two terrains, and I think that's gone well, though I am really itching, actually, not from like anything physical. I don't have a rash or anything. I am itching. I am motivated. I'd love to return to the topic of atheism again. I'm not sure in what form. So, because I find it to be fascinating philosophically, scientifically. So maybe in a few years.
Yeah. All right. Argue from the pro-God side, though. You're way better at that.
Well, I've thought about even one way of maybe going really, really in depth, and another being something where I go out and talk to many of these leading atheists you see on YouTube and debates on college campuses and have more of a kind of a dialogue type format with those who disagree, who represent the other side very well. So we'll see what comes of it.
Oh, all right. Well, that's something to look forward to. Corey in Vancouver is watching on YouTube. Thanks for joining us on YouTube there, Corey. Why are you an atheist? Corey, did I miss you? Oh, hang on. I pushed the wrong button. Corey, that was all me. That's a Friday afternoon rookie mistake. Corey, have I got you now?
No. Hello?
Oh, hi, Corey. Sorry. I pushed a wrong button. Why are you an atheist, Corey? You're on the air with Trent.
Hi, guys. Well, I guess you could sum it up. I mean, there's so many reasons because I've been looking a long time. but hiddenness would probably encapsulate that.
Okay.
And I just want to encourage Trent, I know it's his go-to to jump to the philosophical arguments. To a guy like me, that really undermines your case. Christianity makes specific claims about intersecting with the world, and I think we can test those claims,
okay.
Or we should be able to anyways, if you're claiming that they are the case.
What kind of...
I'd really like to see you guys take on things like why prayer doesn't work.
What kind of claims are you talking about?
I mean, I can't speak for you. Every Christian seems to have slightly different claims.
Uh-huh.
But you presumably believe that intercessory prayer has an effect in the world. You believe, I guess, in a soul that somehow interacts with a brain or a body.
Okay.
You believe in the devil. I assume that that means that you believe that there's a supernatural intersection in the world of his actions. What I'm saying is we can look for these effects. You tell me which one's the strong one, and I'll convert right now on the phone. I've got a bowl of water.
You have a bowl of... Oh, for baptism.
He can't baptize himself.
Yes, auto-baptism is not valid. But it seems to me what you're saying is that we should be able to empirically detect the effect of supernatural agents. But by definition, isn't the only thing that we could detect in this world natural events, and then we have to make some kind of philosophical inference that it's a supernatural agent?
Well, we can certainly detect the effects. We
right.
don't have to know the cause. If you're telling me that you can multiply loaves to 5,000, mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I could do that, sure, we could test that, but I can't do that, and Christians don't claim they can do that. They can only claim that a guy who walked the earth 2,000 years ago was able and is actually still able to do that. So for me, though, Christianity, or you could put it this way, classical theism does hold that God sustains the world that we live in. He created it and sustains it. But the arguments we would use would be philosophical in nature. But I don't see what's wrong with philosophical arguments, because it seems to me that every time I hear a skeptic kind of raise these objections saying that, well, we need to have things empirical, philosophy is not a good way to go about it, they kind of make arguments about why these traditional arguments aren't the best way to go. But that presupposes that arguments have validity, they can prove things. So what do you think about the idea that a deductive argument, you have a premise, logical reasoning, a premise, and then a conclusion, you can prove that conclusion. Do you disagree with that?
No, I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
I think you might have misunderstood me slightly. I'm not necessarily against philosophical arguments, but I'm trying to keep it interesting and brief.
Oh, yeah, sure. I agree with you, Corey. Corey, I see what you're saying, like the effects. Like, well, if God answers prayers, why don't we test that? Here's my other problem with that. That when we do scientific experiments, we have conclusions based on the fact that the laws of nature operate with regularity, right?
Yes, I think we all make the assumption that the world is comprehensible and that it, that it's comprehensible.
Right, and it's regular. So we can make these conclusions about gravity because the laws of nature, these natural forces operate with regularity. They don't, they just are automatic processes. But does God, let's say pick prayer, for example. Let's do a study to answer prayer. Does God answer prayers in an automatic way?
No, of course not.
So then how could we do a scientific study on prayer if it's not a natural process? It's one that he does. And let me add one more monkey wrench into that for trying to prove God. When you do a scientific study, you have to make sure it's blind or double blind. The person you experiment on can't know they're in an experiment, or they'll act differently. And that's why when people do experiments, you know, they don't know what they're in on. It's blind or double blind. But because God is omniscient, you can never do a blind study on him. So if we try to study prayer, say, oh, we're going to prove if prayer works, God might say, I don't feel like being in this particular experiment, but thanks anyways, guys. Rather, I think because the supernatural is not a natural process, we don't use the tools of science to investigate it. We use the tools of philosophy to infer the existence of supernatural reality.
And we'll leave it there, Corey, because we are at the end. Trent Horn, thanks very much.
No problem, sir.
Really
glad to be here.
Yeah, it's always great when you're here. I love that when we do this, the Why Are You an Atheist shows, too. Well, that is the end of the work week. We'll maybe catch our show on the weekend. Don't know. But in the meantime, Jesus Christ is the light of the nations, and we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.